Well, we're glad you've chosen GoldSeek.com Radio for another Gold Nugget episode. Today's special guest, Christopher Duane from the Sons of Liberty Academy. Christopher Duane makes his debut on GoldSeek.com Radio. He's the founder of Sons of Liberty Academy and sees challenging times ahead, to say the least, for the financial markets and investors, which requires a sea change in investment strategy and tact. Welcome, Christopher.
Thank you so much for having me on. I'm very excited for this conversation.
You know, we were having a interesting discussion before the interview, and you hate to lose that because we want the listeners to hear people's innermost thoughts. And we were comparing and contrasting, if you will, how important it is to catch these major themes and trends that oftentimes the mainline media, they just don't give you the heads up. And one of those themes was the housing crisis, where apparently you were a year ahead of my family. We sold near the peak in 2006. You say that you sold your house in New Jersey in 2005. Tell us more.
Sure. Yeah, it was July of 2005, and my wife was actually 7 months pregnant with our first child, and I took the very odd idea of that we're in the middle of a housing bubble and that things were going to not end well and that I should cash out while I was still ahead. Basically, I woke up in May of 2005. I realized that the Federal Reserve was a privately owned company that created all this wealth, that the government was manipulating interest rates down, that the consumers were buying stuff that they couldn't afford, that the documentation process that was involved in this housing bubble was allowing people who couldn't even buy cars 2 years ago now buy $500,000 houses in my area. And I said, that's enough for me. We actually sold everything, and I put all the proceeds into gold and silver back in 2005. So I did two very odd things by not going against the trend in the housing bubble and then buying this stuff called gold and silver, which I had no clue about, you know, months prior. But I knew that that was the place to be for the next decade.
But, you know, you also talked about, or we talked about, how you had to go against not only the mainline thinking, but also against the general prevailing thought within your circle of friends and family. And I think that for most people, that contrarian perspective against peer pressure is one of the tougher things to wrap their minds around. Thinking outside the box can be challenging. Tell folks how you were able to make that leap of faith.
The only way you can do it is by using logic. You can't listen to everybody. Studies have shown that people will intentionally choose the wrong answer simply to conform with the collective. And, you know, any amount of psychological tests will prove that. Well, if that's the guiding force of most people's thinking, being the rational individual, you have to think outside the box. And, you know, that's where I think logic comes in. And it allowed me to basically look at this world and look at the facts. Don't look at the emotion of what's going on. And then predict what's the most likely outcome of this. Can this go on forever? Most trends usually don't. They usually end horribly. And the best thing to do is basically, you know, keep questioning the reality that's out there, and you'll be far off better. Like I told you in the pre-interview, you're not going to be able to day trade by this by any means, but you can certainly be on the right side of history when it matters the most.
It's so easy to look back, isn't it, in the rearview mirror and say, oh, well, it was obviously a housing peak. Most people missed it, though. What really grabbed my attention, and I held on to it, even wrote about it in Wealth Building Strategies 2006, 7, and 8, was the reset of the subprime and related adjustable rate mortgages and all the different classes in there. I held on that, and my thinking was, you know, until we can get this glut of inventory, this shadow inventory, washed out of the system, I just couldn't fathom how we could see a bottom before around 2011, 2012. Well, that just came to pass. Let's move on. You talk about traditional investing methodologies. You expect them to backfire. A different mindset is required to be rewarded by big profits. Give us an idea of what you see on a forward-looking basis.
Look at the S&P 500. I mean, if you look at the peaks in 2000 and 2008, those were obviously bubbles back then, and now we're leap years beyond that. I mean, since 2013, this market's been literally on a 45-degree angle straight up, without even pullbacks of even more than, you know, 4 or 5%. And each pullback that they have is smaller and smaller. They used to have a 10% pullback, 7% pullback, 5% pullback, and then move up. Now it's getting hyperbolic the way that it's going. So conventional wisdom would tell you right now, oh, the stock market's doing well. I tell you what, I don't hear anybody talking about the stock market like they did in 2000. I just think that it's a terrible place to be. That's not to say that I would short that market, simply because the underlying bubble that's driving all of this is the dollar, and that's what I'm most concerned about, and that's the biggest reason why I invest in gold and silver, is because that the underlying currency that's denominating the bond bubble, the real estate bubble, the stock market bubble, the American bubble, is horribly being undermined right now, and I don't think it's going to survive. So that's the main reason why I buy this gold and silver, is because it's insurance against real tangible wealth in your hands against all this intangible claims on future wealth, which is what the dollar is.
I liken the erosion of a currency to, think of the Golden Gate Bridge, or maybe just the Interstate Bridge in your community. You know, they build these giant edifices based on steel structures surrounded by concrete. If any water really seeps in there and erodes the rebar, the steel underlying the mechanism, you can have a failure in a moment's notice, and the whole thing, the whole edifice, comes crumbling down. Well, that's, I think, an apt analogy. 1 million people a year cross the bridge in your community, and they think nothing of it. They're doing 55, 65 miles an hour. Everything's fine. And then suddenly, just the corrosion of that steel entered and the whole thing comes tumbling down. Could we see something sudden like that with our currency? And what would it mean for investors?
I don't see how we can possibly avoid it. I mean, show me one, fiat currency that's lasted as long as the dollar, and I'll show you 5,000 of them that have collapsed, horribly. And people that have been involved in having their wealth denominated in it have always come out the worst part of it. So people don't forget, or people do forget, that in 2008 we were within hours of the entire world economy collapsing. I have Representative Ken Jankowski out of Pennsylvania giving C-SPAN testimony, talking about how there was an electronic run on the bank, and that $5.5 trillion was pulled out of the money market account within an hour. I mean, that's a third of the United States' yearly GDP was pulled out of the money market funds because there was an electronic run on the bank. And they talked about if the government didn't step in, that would have been it. I mean, literally within hours on that day. And yet it passes. Nobody noticed that day. And even now, people still trust the system. I don't understand why people would even have a dollar inside the banking system knowing how fragile it is.
I'd like to just delve into why this is so significant. We're bombarded, aren't we, with information from every source, whether it be mainline media or the blogosphere, just an overwhelm of information. However, at the end of the day, when you take a look at the charts going over, that period from 2000, let's say 8, we came within hours, not days, from the end. Look across the board, nearly anything related to bonds, anything related to stocks, with very few exceptions. And as you say, without the Federal Reserve and their colleagues stepping in with an unimaginable amount, the Fed may have extended as much as $17 trillion to Europe and around the world just to keep this house of cards from imploding. So tell us more.
My thinking is that people that didn't learn the lesson in 2008 are going to lose everything this next crisis. They were fed up with the wars, but you know what? Hope and change Obama was coming. He was going to solve everything. So that happened right as the people still had faith in Greenspan and Bernanke and this almighty wisdom of what happened. They even had faith in Wall Street. And now I think that since this crisis and the systemic damage it has done, you can look at the labor participation rates, and you can look at all the bailouts, and you can look at the lack of jail time of any of these Wall Street guys that pilfered billions of dollars from the taxpayers. No punishment handed down. You can't tell me that the psychology now, today, with people who have lost their jobs, people who have lost their savings, people who have lost their faith in the politicians and the banking system, are going to roll over again the next time that this happens. And it's going to be magnitudes worse because the problem was not solved in 2008. It was kicked down the road. And you mentioned before $17 trillion by the Federal Reserve. That's just what they admit to. We have no clue of what has been going on behind the scenes. What's most important is that since 2008, you look at what China has been doing, Russia has been doing, Iran has been doing. They've been slowly eking away, getting away from the dollar. And you're going to wake up one day and find out that all these nations that have held this world's reserve currency, the next crisis, are going to dump it on the markets. And the value of those dollars are only determined by how many of them are floating around out there. And right now, they're sitting around. But I'm telling you, the next crisis that's going to happen, you watch that dollar price go down, and they're going to throw it at anything that they can, oil, gold, silver, copper, food, corporations. They're going to throw it at that because those at least have some value. These dollars are just future claims on wealth. People need to know that. Your bank deposits, you're a lender to the bank. You have no security in that. So I recommend people stop holding their wealth in intangible things and hold real wealth, which is what gold and silver represents.
The tragedy here, if you will, for lack of a better word, is that we had the opportunity, didn't we, to clear the system? We had the opportunity 2008 and 2009, instead of bailing out the banks with trillions of dollars, we had the opportunity to let the banks fail, to go into foreclosure, to press the reset button. You can take a look at what Sweden did in a similar situation on a miniature scale. They let the banks fail, and then they combined all of the bad debt in one sort of centralized location and managed that. They emerged from this a remarkably powerful economy. Their neighbors to the south, and both of them emerged from the problem by recognizing, look, we've learned our lesson. We don't want your toxic debt. We don't want to import your disease. All right. We don't want to fall into this debt trap, and they've avoided it ever since. So there's a lot, I think, to be learned from there. Any comments?
Yeah, I mean, think about human nature. I mean, we're a country that's absolutely drunk on power, we create debt out of nowhere. That's all we do. We don't produce anything anymore. We have more people that are unemployed, that, you know, are out of the labor participation of the economy, and we're a nation that has gotten something for nothing for a couple generations. And when this ends, the drunk only changes when he hits rock bottom. And I don't expect people to wake up. I don't expect any grand reform. There's no political savior that's going to come in and save this system. The only thing that's going to happen and the only thing that's going to change is that we have to have a collapse. People think that, these great depressions and economic crises are something to be avoided. No, I think the greatest personal things in my life have been the biggest setbacks. Well, that's going to be the same thing for us. We need to have this collapse to reset our values, to bring back productive forces into our economy as opposed to just these Ponzi scheme distractions that we have. We need this, and it's coming. And all I can tell individuals to do is you have to individually prepare for this collective fate that's coming.
Let's take a look at the bail-ins. I think this is an excellent segue into another topic I'd like for us to discuss today, and it all ties in with the noose that's being dropped around all of our necks collectively. Take a look at bail-ins. I mean, we've seen what happened in Europe. Now we're seeing legislation written in Canada and the United States, all over North America. The powers that be are aware that the system is imploding. It may be a slow-motion train wreck, but it is inevitable, okay? And if you see this coming and you're aware of it, you can start to take some measures. Why should people be nervous about their money market funds? Is it really safe as money in the bank?
No, it isn't. I mean, you're a unsecured creditor. You look up any legal definition of somebody that deposits money at a bank, you are an unsecured creditor. That's the lowest form that you could possibly be. And if you give your money to the bank, you're literally giving it to them. You know, they're supposed to give it back, but you're an unsecured creditor during the most difficult of times. So, you know, I don't have any stock money in the account. Everything that I other than a month's worth of, you know, cash to keep the house moving along, everything else is out of it and put it into the gold and silver. And that's the way that it should be, because that's real tangible wealth. You know, that's something you can hold. You know, if you went through any time in history and you told humans, 200, 300,000 years ago that, oh, look, I have a little screen that says I have $1 million and I can go buy this super fast Ferrari. That's the overriding theme of what's going on. And I can assure you that when this collapse happens, our grandchildren will look back at us and think about how that we actually trusted the worst in humanity on Wall Street and Washington with all of this money, and that we thought that these computer screens actually meant something. No, we're going to get back to biblical wealth. We're going to get back to gold and silver and what land and productive and factories and things that actually provide real value to humanity, not these scams and schemes that are producing millionaires left and right and billionaires all over the place. You know, look at the people that are making the most amount of money right now, and they provide the least amount of value. The rock stars, the lawyers, the lobbyists, the military contractors, they don't provide any real value to humanity. And yet the people that do, the electricians and the teachers and the farmers, they're barely eking by. When the dollar collapses, you'll see a reversion where those that actually produce real wealth come out of this far better off and actually take the burden that has been placed on us.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I talked to G. Edward Griffin last week and several other guests recently. You know, why is it that people can't recognize how corrupt the system is? They fall into it and it almost becomes second nature. And I think when you're born into a system, it's almost like the Matrix. You know, I hate to use the overused, the tired analogy of, you know, Morpheus and Neo and the rest, but I mean, you're really born into the Matrix, and we have been here. I think you'd agree ever since at least Nixon shut the gold window, but really it was long before then. It was when the creature from Jekyll Island was unloosed in 1913. Things just slowly erode, and if you're a student of history, you begin to realize it unfolds in a very similar path. No, it's not a perfect facsimile. It's cyclical, and you can see how morals erode in almost every instance where fiat money really took hold. And I think you'd agree there's never been a time in history where fiat money was more pervasive. We simply don't have a, thanks to Gresham's Law, I guess, a currency that is ubiquitously backed by precious metals anymore. It's just been pushed out of the system. In keeping precious metals on our minds here, let's move on to another topic that I know is near and dear to you and our listeners want to hear about, and that, of course, the London silver price fix. After 117 years, this has apparently come to a close. They have rejected it. Four or five of the top banks there used to agree each day on the silver price. And I wonder if you could tell people why you think this is a significant moment for the precious metals markets.
I think the only thing that matters before and after the London silver fix is the fact that Deutsche Bank was forced out by BaFin. BaFin is the German equivalent of like the SEC. And BaFin said that the manipulation in commodities and specifically precious metals was worse than the $800 trillion LIBOR scandal. And they forced Deutsche Bank to end that relationship with the London silver fix. So Deutsche Bank wanted immediately out of it, and the Bank of England somehow convinced them to stay on for 3 months to act as a buffer period so that they could establish a new one. So what they ended up doing is they ended up establishing a new one with, I think, replacing Deutsche Bank with Mitsui. And now it's an electronic system, supposedly more transparent. But it doesn't matter. I mean, it's a computerized paper scheme, and they could dump billions of dollars onto the paper market. No one's taking delivery from there. So I think at the end of the day, the manipulation is going to continue until it ends, and it's going to end horribly. There has to be a physical break in the market. There has to be physical shortages that override this paper market, and that anybody trading long or short in paper in these markets, are adding to the problems. They need to just simply buy physical silver, which is my preference over gold. And just wait for the day that it matters most. And to think that you're going to be able to get plus or minus 10% above the market and risk your whole amount of capital inside of that, I'm more concerned about the return of capital than the return on capital.
Will Rogers, if I'm not mistaken. And also Warren Buffett also echoed his sentiments. All right, you also investigate why most oversold markets make the largest returns. Silver, I think, certainly qualifies here. I mean, from a contrarian perspective, we've had quite a sell-off. I'd like to give you a chance here to outline what will be the impetus taking AG back to 50 and higher.
Well, I think ultimately the dollar crisis is what's going to propel it to these astronomical numbers. And I really refuse to put any dollar figure on it, because I think that the time that I've invested for silver is for the day that the dollar doesn't buy an ounce of silver anywhere. That it's just a failed currency, and that it could be denominated in, you know, billions or trillions, like we've seen in Zimbabwe or Weimar Germany. But, you know, think about it. I mean, in 2005, when I first started investing in silver, nobody talked about it. I mean, it was such a small piece. Like, I remember David Morgan and maybe one or two other guys out there really talking about it. But you couldn't find out much about it. And now the whole blogosphere, I mean, there's tons of blogs and radio shows and all devoted to it now. So I think the awareness has reached a certain level now where people are out there. But look at the demand that has been driven on silver in coin sales since 2005, in solar power since 2005. The industrial demand has gone up significantly, and the biggest reason why I'm investing in it is because this is a precious and depleting resource that's absolutely vital to a modern way of life. And the United States Geological Survey, I think back in 2007, predicted that between 2020 and 2030, there would physically be no more silver on Earth. If we keep consuming the amount of silver that we have on a level, and we do consume it, like it's physically destroyed as in most of these processes, there will be no silver left anymore. And when I wrote the author of that study back, I think in 2010, I said, you know, can you clarify that? And he said, well, unless there's a price change that allows more production to come online or wiser use of that silver, that's what's going to end up happening, because there's only a finite amount of this silver that's out there.
I'll give you an example. Today, I've been drinking from a Brita water filter. They take the carbon and they spray it with micro silver, and it's in everything. You'll never reclaim that silver again. You might be thinking, well, that's a minuscule amount. Yes, but there are millions of people using Brita water filters. Cell phones filled with tiny amounts of silver, your computer keyboard, it'll be tossed, very difficult to reclaim. The silver simply won't be reclaimed by anything much more than Mother Nature over millions of years, and it disappears for good. I'd also like to talk about an important aspect of silver, at least that economists like to look at, and that's its Giffen good status. You know, I mean, people know that have studied Econ 101 that Giffen goods have upward sloping demand curves. People have a tendency to consume more of it despite the fact that the price is increasing. That's not a positive factor, but when it comes to silver, due to the absolutely inelastic demand that we have, we just must have it, period. There are very few substitutes that are reasonable. You can't use gold, for instance, to replace that silver in electronics, not because it won't work, but simply because it's just too costly. This kind of seems to be setting the stage for an interesting scenario for silver investors. Please tell us more.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what's going on in India. They're going to build the world's largest solar farm. I think it's going to be miles big. I mean, it's a huge endeavor that it's going to have. And that alone is going to take up 10 million ounces a year. You know, I think the United States Mint only, produces 40 million ounces of Silver Eagles a year. So right off the bat, that's more demand that's coming online. And we're having declining, finding of this stuff. And silver is also an interesting thing, that it's relatively shallowly mined. It's not like gold where you can dig miles and miles down. And when it's shallow mined, that means it's depleted even faster. And you think about, 200 years ago, the gold to silver ratio was, 15 to 1. For every ounce of gold you found 15 ounces of silver. And now it's 1 to 9. You know, there's for 1 ounce of gold, there's 9 ounces of silver. I mean, that's a significant drop just in the natural amount that's come out of the ground. And yet, where's gold and silver trading on the dollar market? I mean, we're like 1 to 65. 1 ounce of gold equals, 65, 67 ounces of silver. I mean, that's a huge wealth discrepancy in the pricing mechanism of that. I mean, reality is that it has to be at least closer to what is coming out of the ground, and I think it's even worse than that, because all the gold that's ever been mined has been saved and treasured. And we've destroyed and burned through billions of ounces of stockpile, where I think that there's physically less silver above ground and than there is gold.
You're absolutely right. Silver had a tendency to pool near the surface, and so most of the big finds have been found. You know, most of the Comstock lodes, if you will. It's a thing of the past. So now, most of our silver is a byproduct of copper and, of course, gold, nickel, if you will, but mostly copper production. But another topic you brought up that I think is so important and central to the theme of silver's value, intrinsic value on a forward-looking basis, and that's solar production. I have a solar array with 10 panels. We produce a kilowatt per hour at peak. Every one of these panels has at least an ounce of silver. That's an ounce of silver that could never be reclaimed. It would not be cost effective with silver anything less than $100 to $200 an ounce. It's gone forever. And you touched on this. India, very much inclined to build these solar arrays, but so is China and Germany and all over Europe. And the United States is only now coming online because I think we were disappointed by Jimmy Carter's push around the 70s wasn't cost effective, but solar power has come a long way in 20, 30 years. You can get an amazing amount of output at a very low cost, pure sine wave inverters, which allow your sensitive electronics, your latest computers, laptops, and related technologies to run without a glitch. Battery storage, it's very inexpensive relative to where it was a few decades ago. So even I think the more modest middle class home is starting to look at it, but there's another wild card that I hope some of my listeners have picked up over the years, and that is grid-tie inverters. Plug that power without a battery bank, without much of a solar array, with a very small investment, you can use a grid-tie inverter, not in all areas. You plug that right into the wall, and your meter will start to run backwards. And once again, an inexpensive technology, and please, by the way, for our listeners, don't run out and buy a grid-tie inverter until you've talked to your local power company. But for a lot of people, it is an option that's available. And once again, silver will be in big demand there for decades to come. Christopher Duane, it's been fun having you on the show. Why don't you tell folks more about the services you provide and how people can direct their web browsers to your sites?
My YouTube channel is called The Truth Never Told. It's on YouTube. We've got 72,000 subscribers and 15 million views. I have the Silver Shield Exchange and Silver Shield Collection. These are coins that I've designed myself. We have our own marketplace for them. They're very different. I've tried to create a privately minted coins because I find that ironic that so many people hate the dollar and what's going on in the world and then go rush out and go buy silver from the United States Treasury. So I think that we should be supporting privately minted solutions, and these are definitely unique coins that, I think most people will like.
And by avoiding the cartel that is likely behind much of our oppression and the powers that be, there are alternative sources. Do you want to share any more specifics there?
This is my third year. I've probably designed 25 different coins, and I have probably another 20 that could come out in, any time. But, they're unique pieces that I call them historically significant because they call out both the good and the bad of what's going on in this world. I mean, I've done coins that mock, debt and death empire, that we've spread all this war and we, rally around all these flags. I've done coins that have talked about the trivium, which is grammar, logic, and rhetoric on how to free the individual's mind from this collective oppression that's going on there. I did Freedom Girl. I've done so many designs out there, but they're all unique, where I think, the wonderful thing about these silver coins is they're going to be around 200, 300, 400 years from now, just like the Roman coins were. And future generations are going to look at these designs and go, not everybody went along with what was the mainstream out there, that big dollar collapse that changed human history.
You might recall how it certainly appeared as though there was a collected effort against one of the fathers in this area, the founding fathers, and that's, of course, Bernard von Nothaus, how his life was just systematically destroyed when he created that Liberty Dollar, I think he referred to it. Beware on the specifics that are minted, which I'm sure you've already taken caution.
I learned a great deal of adolescence from Bernard's unfortunate case. I ran to his defense when he was called a domestic terrorist. For that, we have a privately owned Federal Reserve that's funding all these wars, and they turn a blind eye to them, obviously, because it's in the power, and Bernard was obviously challenging the status quo. But Yeah, none of my coins say dollar on them, have dollar symbols, values on them. They can never be mistaken for any legal currency, and they're all denominated in what the only thing that I measure my wealth in is ounces.
Christopher Duane, we're going to look forward to having you back on the show.
I appreciate it, and I had a great time.